thing I didn't realize, thank God she told me, was you have to put in a chatbot, whether you're talking to a person or a chatbot. And because of that, she got nailed big time. Hey everyone, this is Norm Ferrar, aka the Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. Today, we're talking about branding, but not just any branding, hero branding for e-commerce, leveraging AI for creative at scale. We're going to also be talking about how does hero branding use AI for e-commerce creative? Which AI tools are integral part of Hero's brand scaling? And also, how does Hero maintain brand identity with AI-generated content? All right, everybody, welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. Okay, like I said, today we are going to be discussing Hero branding for e-commerce, leveraging AI for creative at scale. Our guests today are the creative director and CEO of Full Stacked Agency. Jace has supported and led creative teams both in-house and as an agency from startups to well-known brands like Target, the NHL, NBA, Tory Burch, Columbia Records, and even Nintendo. And these are just to name a few. Amara trained internal teams such as Digital Marketer and HubSpot, and as a certified agency partner for a ton of different companies, including Databox and Google. So please welcome Jace Brown and Amara Omarege. But now let's have a word from our sponsor. Facing cash flow challenges with your e-commerce business? Discover Viably, your ultimate financial ally. From real-time sales data integrations to immediate funding access, Viably is here to support you. Plan your growth with their free tool for online sellers and engage with specialists whenever you need. Extend your cash flow with Viably. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, enjoy the show. Welcome, Jace and Amara. I am so sorry that Kelsey screwed up your last name.
It's okay, Norm.
he has that tendency, you know. I could do this because, he's the right pay.
I'm going to say he's on your payroll. So
there we go. So Jace, this is the first time we've had you on the podcast.
Indeed.
Tell us a little bit more about what you do. You got me intrigued with some of these organizations you worked with.
Yeah. And that was just a handful of my faves. I've been doing brand design development since the late 90s, early 2000s. And what I typically do is just, you know, I audit brands. I figure out where their opportunities are, you know, strengths, weaknesses, figure out some type of story or narrative that really resonates with their target audience. So it's a fun challenge.
Oh, and you're both working together. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. Dynamic duel. Now you've got me intrigued with this hero branding, by the way. So and I know Amara, you've been into AI and you've been into all sorts of other things like recently. So how are you taking AI? Well, first let's back up. What the heck is hero branding?
So our hero framework is about, because everything, the more digital we get, the more we need to remember that everything that we do in marketing, everything that we do on the web is in service to human beings. And so we have our human experience and revenue optimization framework that we have been championing. And our goal is to help marketers, help people, help companies that are utilizing the web to generate more of an audience, to generate more revenue, anything like that, to focus on the human experience. Because a lot of times we do things in service of revenue, in service of money, in service of vanity metrics like views and things like that. But all of that revenue and all that will come if we focus on the service to humans. And so the more that we leverage AI, the more that we tend to forget that whenever we're utilizing AI, we have to make sure that it passes this sniff test for human beings. People are getting called out left and right for AI commenting, AI content, because I feel quite literally people don't like bad AI content. People don't like bad content in general. If people are able to tell, like, this isn't generated by a human. We don't read like this. We don't talk like that. Right. And it's actually hurting brands right now if people aren't using AI properly. And I see more improper uses of it nowadays than I see proper uses of it. Or people are just completely avoiding AI altogether because they're afraid of it. And that's not it either. And so Jason and I wanted to talk today about how to use AI responsibly. Because here's the thing, the companies that don't leverage AI will be left behind because people, it's kind of like, I talk about the Renaissance age when art materials weren't as widely available to people. Mm-hmm. But then when paintbrushes and canvases and art materials were more widely available, people were afraid more artists were going to emerge. I mean, just because the tools are available doesn't mean there's experts that know how to use them necessarily. And you still have to have expertise. You still have to understand what you're solving for, what problems you're solving for. And you still have to have the creativity to be able to use the tools the way that they need to be used in order for them to really help the situation instead of hurt the situation. And so when everybody talks about AI taking your jobs, there's some truth to that. However, I think it's going to make our job evolve. I don't know that it's necessarily going to take our jobs. I think our jobs will evolve. I think experts are going to have to know how AI can be used to make our content better. But generative AI currently doesn't create anything original. Everything it creates is derivative of something, right? If it doesn't already exist, it can't really create it. All it can do is say, hey, here's a whole lot of what we think you want, and we're going to make it into something new. And so I think we're going to be leveraging AI to take a lot of our original thoughts, ideas, concepts, and better refine it for global consumption. We still have to have new ideas. We still have to have creativity. We still have to have all of those things in order to use AI well. And so when we talk about responsible AI usage, Google, as a matter of fact, has been trying to figure out what their helpful content update since last September. And Norm, last time I was on the show, we talked about SEO. Mm-hmm. And so I want to go back there for just a second because Google is doing a lot right now with SEO in the e-commerce space. A lot right now at the e-commerce space, organically and paid as well. That is worth noting. That kind of falls in line with our hero framework. So Google's helpful content update back in September was to help get rid of, it wasn't about necessarily AI content. It was about getting rid of content that wasn't helpful. And so a lot of marketing experts have been teaching this method of creating content at scale. Use Surfer SEO. Go look at all your competitors. Compare all their pages. Write a better title tag, write a better meta tag, and just make a bunch of content that regurgitates the same crap over and over again across the web. Google's like, that's not helpful. They don't want to litter people with a bunch of the same content from page to page to site. They want original, authoritative, trustworthy, expertise, experiences, EEAT. That is what we're going for here. Back in the day, I want to say 10 years ago, Google pretty much changed the face of search and said, hey, we don't need as much help as we used to back in the day. You don't have to have every single keyword on a page anymore for us to understand its context. We have machine learning. We have natural language processing. We have all these different algorithms now that understands words and context. We just need you to write better content now. People are stuck in the ice ages of search, doing things the old way, and then they're wondering why their sites are being penalized. Google just launched a major core update, March 5th, I think it was. And it's been a bloodbath. I hate to use that word because for political reasons. However, it's been a bloodbath. Sites are getting completely indexed because they created a ton of content at scale using AI that wasn't helpful, that users don't like. And so should you use AI tools like ChatGPT, Claude, Copilot, or anything like that to write content? The answer is, it depends. It's supposed to be used as a writing assistant, a brainstorming tool. It's not meant to create general ideas. It's not meant to originate ideas. It's not meant to be to support with thought leadership. You still need a subject matter expert to provide an expert opinion, their own spin, or whatever to the content. That doesn't go away. So when they say AI is taking people's jobs, it can't. right? Like, we as human beings still have subject expertise. We still have mastery. We still have experience. And that has to come to the table in order for content to be effective, in order for it to be original. And then there's all these laws, these copyright laws and things like that. The courts haven't really decided a whole lot on AI usage yet, but there are different guidelines and rules that different content platforms are putting in place. YouTube recently put out guidance on some AI content. Like, if AI video content looks realistic, you have to disclose that it's AI content. They're starting to roll that change out. That's very new. I think it's as of a few weeks ago. And so it's getting there. There's going to be a lot more rules around what AI content and disclosure. But as long as you are actually taking an original idea, an original thought, and your actual expertise and leveraging AI, it'll allow you to use it responsibly versus just using it to take your competitor's content and regurgitate it in your own words just so it can pass plagiarism. That's not going to help. You're actually going to get your site not only dinged by Google and Google search, you're also going to get it de-indexed. De-indexed means completely wiped off the web. Wow. Right? Google's literally just taking sites down.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not. So there, you can actually research this. I can provide the links to you, if you'd like. Google's latest core update, and then they just did what they call a spam brain. Google's spam engine, recognizing spam and things of that nature. There's three key things that they're looking at in the spam update: the velocity in which the content was created, the quality of the content. I can't remember the third thing, but I can send you guys the article that has all three of the pieces listed. Another tactic that people were using is buying old domains that expired and then writing content that's not helpful and linking and doing all sorts of things to try to boost another website or page. That's a spam policy. It's against their new spam policies. So be sure to read through all that, because some of the stuff that you used to do that a lot of SEOs were recommending, don't do it, because your sites will get completely removed from the web. They won't toggle your site. They will completely just remove your whole site.
That's crazy. I know that back, and I'm talking back in the day, like last year, we did something really stupid and we learned very quickly. And one of our VAs published something and I started getting all these complaints, and it was like, what's going on? And I took a look and I read it and I went, oh my God, this is not me. This doesn't sound anything like me. This is, first of all, they've got the wrong facts. And we ended up apologizing for publishing that. But somebody had taken AI, just put in just a general prompt and came up, and it just spit out this horrible like article. And so we've had to adapt, and we've made sure, like, anything is published actually starts off with either me, Kelsey, or one of the experts that can actually fact check it and make sure that it's correct. And AI just helps enhance it once we're at that point. We had a powerhouse week this week. Scott Cunningham was on. So we were talking about TBIF and AI. Then John Benson was on, and he was talking about some of the stuff that he was doing. And now, of course, we've got you two on here, which just knocks it out of the park this week. But Jace, how do you feel about this?
Well, the most interesting part of what Amara was explaining is the idea of authenticity. And I feel like as we move more towards artificial intelligence or just anything that's automated in general, we start to lose that human touch. And the thing with branding is that perception is really important. You have equity, of course, up to a certain point. Even with you, with your podcast, I'm sure when you posted that article, when that article was shared, you had this feeling of, oh shoot, we're never really going to be able to get that back. You know, people are going to look at us a certain way now. Certain parts of your audience would be affected by that. And that's something that AI has been damaging, you know, in the recent past. People continue to leverage it as if it can replace an employee or a certain part of the creative process, and it really can't. And like you had said, it requires somebody who's an expert to jump back in and actually take a look at it, ensure that it's on brand, both in voice and tone, values, you know, the whole brand foundation before it's put out. and we've been dealing with this for decades, if not generations. You think about the music industry, the film and TV industry even, it's always been a battle for authenticity and original content. At what point do we get to where there's no more original content? Everything's just being rehashed, sampled, reproduced, or just taken from just way too on the nose. We see it all the time in TV these days. It's really difficult to find something that's original. And even when it does happen, you know, somebody takes it and runs with it and it becomes a new trend. So
now, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay. So I'm going to, in a second, just turn off the camera, bring it back on. But while I'm doing that, so there's no delays. So let's talk about the hero branding and the use of AI for commercial or e-commerce creative. Can we talk about that while I'm debugging my camera?
No worries. Yes. Jason, I'm going to kind of start it off really quick because one of the things I see a lot of people doing, and if this is you, it's okay. We all learn. One of the things I see people doing is because a lot of the AI tools, not to bash Jasper, because I think Jasper is a great tool. A lot of the AI tools, when they're prompting, especially for content, let's talk about content, creating content at scale. So you prompt it, yes, ChatGPT to write about a subject, and then you tell it what you want it to sound like. You want it to give it have a funny tone. You want it to be casual. You want it to be formal. And when we take the mastery out of what we're doing and we use these tools incorrectly, we think we're checking the box of aligning our messaging with branding when we've completely missed the mark. You need to actually go through certain exercises. There's a process to determining a brand's voice and tone. And so, yes, use AI to create content, but go through a proper branding exercise to determine your unique brand's voice and tone. Because if everybody's typing casual in the ChatGPT, there's nothing unique about it. No one can look at or read something and think, oh, that's British Petroleum, that's McDonald's, that's Kate Spade. When I read Kate Spade's content, I can tell it's Kate Spade because it's whimsical. It's about a woman who has these, a young woman who's carefree and lives by her own rules. They don't use capital letters. That's part of their style guide. Everything's in lowercase, even, you know, words that start after a period in a sentence. That's part of their style, right? Voice, tone, style. That's part of their brand. You still have to establish that part of your brand. Now, ChatGPT cannot do that for you. They're not going to create anything unique. And so, Jace, you and I talk a lot about voice and tone. And so I want to, for the listeners that are here today, I want to talk about our process for developing voice and tone. It's not our process, it's the process for developing voice and tone.
There are many different processes that you could lay out for voice and tone, but at the end of the day, it's what you had mentioned. You have to get to the core of the archetype, in a sense, of the brand, the character types, the foundation, the values, the mission, the promise, the vision statements, all that type of stuff will get you to a point to where you understand how you should carry yourself in public. Even internally, you see a lot of these companies, we all saw the Nike movie, I'm sure, where their values were blasted on every single wall in that office. And it remains that way in tech industries because they're really trying to influence people internally to live the brand and be ambassadors themselves. And it's nothing that you can really absorb and communicate overnight. It's something that you have to live and breathe. And that's why they put these statements throughout these creative, you know, spaces. It's just a friendly reminder of who you are, why you're here, and what we're here to do. So that's where the voice and tone comes from, is the personality. Back in art school, we used to have creative writing classes where we would have to write the same statement, but to four different people in our family. That was one of the workshops we would do. So we would write, let's say that we were graduating this summer. And we had to write that statement or that note or letter to our grandparents, to our mother, our best friend, and our younger brother. If you think about that line of communication of that statement, it's going to be different depending on who you're speaking to. You're going to adjust things in a certain way. It's still going to sound like you, but you do have to kind of bend and shape shift to resonate with that particular audience, whether it's grandma who was born in the 30s or it was your little brother who was born in the 80s. They're going to have two different ways of comprehending what you said. So it's the same thing with the brand. When you know your audience, you have a good idea of how you should speak to them.
Okay, now let's talk about some of these AI tools that you've been using. What would they be?
Yeah, go for it, Amara. Let's start with the content, I think. Yeah.
Okay, my favorite is, I love Claude. I think Claude just launched 3.0, I believe, a couple weeks ago. Claude's my favorite writing tool. It's not as fancy as ChatGPT. It's not as fancy as some of the other tools out there, but as far as brainstorming and the quality of content and their constitutional AI, where they're trying to leverage AI responsibly without harming anyone, without putting out anything super controversial or mean or something that's going to evoke hate or whatever. They have really, really, their writing has just been so good. And it's just such a fantastic brainstorming tool. The accuracy still needs a little bit of help, and that's with all the tools. None of them are even close to accurate, I'd say 50, 60% of the time. But as a co-pilot for writing, it speeds things up pretty quickly, and it does make me a better writer. I love using it to help make complex things more clear. So if you're in a brand, if you have a company or a brand or a concept or an idea or a product or a service that requires a ton of explanation, or where it's very technical and lay people don't understand it unless they're sitting in front of you and have to listen to a webinar for an hour to finally get it. Leveraging a tool like Claude to break down very hard concepts into something more simple is a great way to use AI. Because I did an example in an accounting Q&A that Jason and I did last Tuesday. In the accounting Q&A, we were trying to explain a tax code. I think it was like 47111 as it pertains to a certain industry. And I asked it to break it down as if I were a ninth grader that owned a business in this industry. And it did a beautiful job of explaining it. Its original explanation was way too technical and it had way too much jargon, but then broke it down and was like, wow, I could actually understand what this is as a layperson. So I encourage people to use it for that, especially if you're in a very complicated industry where your target audience doesn't understand the nuance of your products and services without crazy amounts of explanation. A lot of times we don't communicate in the language that our clients need to hear us. We completely just beat them with information that they just don't understand. And so they don't understand value. And then we don't sell as easily. He or she can articulate your customer's pain points. The best will win. Ryan Dice said that at our last mastermind meetup that we had, Norm. I think you were there for that one. Not this big past one, the one before that.
The one before it, yeah.
He had said that, and he's absolutely right. If you can communicate your customer's pain point, because one of the things that Jason and I talk a lot about is your customers don't know how to articulate their pain. They don't ask the right questions. That's the ultimate issue with search and why search has evolved the way it has. People don't understand the disease. They understand their symptoms. They know how they feel. They know that they feel that way. They just don't want to continue to feel that way. And that's why when we talk about human experience and revenue optimization, our first goal is to understand the disease so we can say, hey, this is actually your problem. Marketers, how many times have you talked to a client where they said, hey, I need social media, or I need paid ads, or I need something? And you're like, okay, well, what are you trying to solve? Well, I'm just trying to get more sales. Well, what if that channel is not how you get more sales because none of your customers are there? You actually just want more sales. That's the thing that you want. How you get it isn't important. Can you get it using this channel is the real question. How should we get it using this channel is a better question, right? And so our customers don't ask very good questions. And so if you're going to leverage AI, you need to do very deep buyer persona work, lots and lots of customer research, actual customer interviews, and then use AI to create content from there versus just saying, hey, I want to rank for this keyword. No, go on to Reddit forums, go into Quora, look at the questions people are asking, and you'll be completely thrown off by how terrible the questions are. And they're not going to get them to the answer that they want, but that's how people articulate it. So you got to give people what they want and then show them what they need. So regardless of what AI tool you use, I like Claude. I use AI once I have a list of questions that my target audience wants answered. Helpful content, because congratulations, now you're making helpful content. I then throw it in AI and figure out how to answer that question based on our expertise. That's how you create great, helpful content at scale. You create content that solves problems.
Yeah, especially when you're going into groups and researching how people talk about the product or service. You know, I think Stephen Black talks about going into a scuba diving Facebook group, and then it niches down. And what's the lingo that they use? So if you're just a seller and you're going out there and you're just putting up a couple of questions, or if you're throwing it into your bullet points on Amazon, people are going to know whether you're actually a scuba diver in this specific niche, or you're just a private label seller who knows nothing. I think that's really important too when you're selling, selling products and services. So, Jace, what about you? What AI tools do you like?
I've really hunkered down with Adobe. Adobe Creative Suite. It's been my bread and butter as far as a tool set since the late 90s, to be honest. And it is pretty much the standard in my field. But we do lean on other, Midjourney, for example, ChatGPT, certain things just to kind of, it's more about research at this point for my field, for artists, for designers, people who are visually communicating what Amara is communicating via text. So it's a bit more slippery on our side because it is pulling from, let's say, Getty Images when you're doing like art creation, but there's ways that we can leverage it responsibly. And that's one of the big things right now in the creative community, people talking about responsible use of AI in art. Because one of my favorite jokes is in the creative world or art world is how many art directors does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the punchline is, why has it got to be a light bulb? So we're always thinking, what's the problem we're trying to solve? And then that will help us determine what tool is the best fit for the job. It's no different than a carpenter, no different than a musician. Let me hear what's going on. Let me hear the stories. And then, okay, I think I know what we're doing now. Let me start to riff on this. That's typically what we do, is we just start to just, another analogy or metaphor would be pulling at the putty until it starts to take shape. We don't know what we're doing until we get in there and get our hands dirty. But Adobe, generative fill, generative expand are two big key tools that we use within Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator. Let's say if we have an e-commerce hero photo where it's the big, beautiful photo on top, and we're using it for the Amazon space, but it doesn't really fit our website because our website's a little wider or it's just different dimension. You can use those tools to generate and expand that image. Respectively, you can purchase the image to start, but you can make it wider. You can make it taller without it looking like you had to paint it in. And even more importantly, you didn't have to pay somebody, $500 an hour to do that for you. You can get a quick look at it, have an understanding of what you need. And then if you so choose to, go ahead and hire an artist to create it that way. But it just gives us a quicker idea of what it could be, in seconds, literally seconds.
Wow. One of the things I like for the podcast, a lot of the times people will come on and they might not be used to podcasts. So they come on with really crappy mics and it's staticky and, there's nothing you can do. We've started to talk. We have to ride through the podcast. So we can use just Adobe Podcast, and it, for the most part, makes it sound like a studio quality mic. I don't know how the hell it does it, but it saved my butt a few times on some interviews.
So, yeah, it really does work well.
Yeah, and I think that's free, by the way. I don't know if anybody's doing any form of audio, you should check it out. It's just Adobe, I think it's just called Adobe Podcast. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a lot of other tools that we use. And I know, Jace, you and I have talked about some of the things that we've been doing. I think design teams, especially with e-commerce, right? There's a lot, especially if you have a big catalog of products, being able to leverage creative at scale, I think is crucial for e-commerce. One of our clients, Verdant Leaf, Norm, you like their products. I drugged you a few times with them. they're safe. No one's
yeah, what are they saying now? They're just thinking, what? Was Norm drugged it with?
No, they're just I'm like, hey, Norm, try this. Yeah. It's totally fine. We've been using AI to speed up production. So we needed to do a, like photo shoots. We didn't have time. We had to get a product launched. We needed to get these white background product shot. Dace was able to leverage a lot of these tools to create at scale 3D renderings of our the product without having to take the product, send it to the photographer, have them shoot it, have them edit it. We were able to do it in a quarter of the time, but only because he is an expert and knows how to use the tools well, understands 3D modeling, and was able to create an entire suite of products in a day or two.
Wow.
Right? White background perfectly dialed in for Shopify and all of that. We're also able to take like images that are low res. We often get headshots from doctors and lawyers and people that need assets. They never send us the right file size. Mm-hmm. If you're a graphic designer or artist or anything like that, go look for some of these tools that can help. What's the proper terminology, Jace? That can help bring the quality of the photo back without
upscale.
Without upscaling it, without messing with the integrity of the photo, so that you can use it in print, on print materials and things like that. Knowing that these tools exist can make your workload much, much faster. Being able to, Jace, when you're editing photos or masking out hair and things like that, you're able to do it in a fraction of the time because you're able to leverage AI tools to mask out hair. These are some of the things that we're going to be teaching in our community. Design teams and teams that deal with a lot of art, how to leverage AI to create content at scale, to make better content at scale. It's not even to just create new content at scale, make better content at scale responsibly, making sure that the human element is incorporated in it, because that's the only way to do it and to make this stuff work and make this stuff last. But you don't get called out by people saying like, that's not real, that's not good. Because it will
all of. I'm sorry, go ahead, Amara.
No, I'm just saying people, I think AI content is fun. Like, I like your AI content. Norm, I see your AI avatar that you have out on your social media. It's cool. It's fun. It's a cool representative. We all know who you are, right? But we know that's not a fake person. So it's kind of a cool representation of you. So we love it. We laugh at it. We think it's interesting and exciting. It shows a different perspective. But I don't see people connecting with AI likenesses very much. It's just not.
To your point, Amara, about it needs to be the brand, the identity, the experience needs to be understood and accepted first. Kind of like with Norm, you have brand equity. People know who you are. So yeah, you can evolve into that space comfortably, you know. But if you start off that way, yeah, it's a bit tough to tell if that's going to be a real human or what am I looking at? I don't know the story. I always say that with branding is that people don't really care what you do. They care why you do it. And if you have a story behind what you're doing, why you're doing it, people will go along for the ride. And then they'll trust anything that you do.
You know, one of the things that you said earlier on, Amara, was about having to let people know if you're human or not. And there has been, and you know Lauren, so she's a friend of ours. And she just got hit, and this is public knowledge. I'm not going to get right into it, with a horrible lawsuit with ADA compliance. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues, so we put ADA compliance on every one of our websites for sure. I don't care if it's a landing page. I'm putting it on there just so I don't get these stupid lawsuits that are, you know, starting to be seen. One thing I didn't realize, thank God she told me, was you have to put in a chatbot, whether you're talking to a person or a chatbot. And because of that, she got nailed big time. And now, of course, she knows that. But I had no clue about this. So these are the things that we're using AI. We're developing new ways to communicate. But you better know what you're doing before you start doing this. So it's just, one of the scarier, you know, issues. But you could probably, I've never done it, but you could probably ask ChatGPT or Claude or whoever, whatever, you know, about these new revisions and see what they have to say. Now, I don't know about that because it's only 2021 and in Claude it's 2023, I believe they're updated to. But let's get over to, it's the bottom of the, way past the bottom of the hour. So if this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, it is, we have a giveaway. And the giveaway today is awesome. But to get it, it's hashtag Wheel of Kelsey. Tag two people, you'll get a second entry. Amara, what are we giving away? I know it is awesome.
We have our community. We are championing revenue optimization. And so you get a year's access to our community. Every month we'll be hosting a workshop on systems, processes, technology, data, creating content at scale for marketing teams. So regardless of what your expertise is, it's a community for all who are looking to create a scalable flywheel for their business or for their clients' businesses.
That's awesome. And that's about $1,000 value as well. So this community, you'll be able to learn a ton. So anyways, if you're interested, hashtag Wheel of Kelsey, tag two people, you get a second entry. And now I'm going to just do a live read for Seller Basics. And by the way, Alex, I know, yep, it was a tough one coming in. But now you can just see if you're interested in NASCAR, you like accidents, wait for the live read. It might be an accident. I might have a blooper, but let's give it a shot. Hey, Amazon sellers, ever faced with account suspensions, ASIN hiccups, or IP headaches? Introducing Seller Basics, your Amazon Accounts Guardian, which is $99 a month, or code NORM, $89 a month. Seller Basics offers a dedicated team to shield your business from these challenges. Plus, this membership offers free legal consultations from seasoned e-commerce attorneys. There's no long-term contracts, and you can just cancel with a month's notice. View Seller Basics as your Amazon account's health plan. And you can check out Seller Basics at their website, sellerbasics.com. Now for the disclaimer, Seller Basics isn't an insurer or law firm. Consultations come from independent firms. Results may vary, and membership is needed before events leading to claims. And terms apply. All right, now let's get back to the podcast.
Awesome.
All right, we're back. And look, it, there was no accidents. There we go. Okay, so now let's talk about some of your successful AI-driven campaigns with using Hero.
Now, I would say that we are taking our existing playbooks and incorporating AI into things that can create repeatable success. My issue with AI, using AI, is that it works. A lot of people's successes are one-hit wonders. A lot of the things don't work at scale. They don't work consistently every single time, right? You would maybe 2 out of 5 times or 3 out of 5 times, you run a prompt and it yields the wrong information and things like that. And so think of Henry Ford, right? And you create a system, you put in an input, you run through the system, it's going to give you the same exact output every single time. That is the key to a good system, right? And so our goal, I would say for us, a successful AI campaign is to be able to use AI the exact same way every single time and always get the right result or a good result. And so a lot of what we're doing with AI is figuring out what to feed the system every single time in order to get the result that we want that doesn't require any editing or any, so that we can hand it off to multiple people. And so that if 6 people use the same exact prompt and feed the same exact thing, it will give us the right result each time. So I think that is more along the lines of a successful AI-driven campaign, is getting it to produce consistently well each and every single time. Now, as far as, I think humans so easily give up their power to AI, you know, and I don't think that AI always outperforms humans. I think people get some false positives in there and it can be exciting, but I don't think AI always performs better than humans. I don't think it performs, there's going to be critics out there that are going to say I'm wrong, and that's fine. Especially in the early days of SEO with AI, I would say last year, if you will. A lot of people were like, see, I can use AI and I can scale up my site. Look, my rankings are going up. Well, that's because the algorithms hadn't adjusted yet, right? Just because you're putting out a lot of content using AI, you're probably getting a lot more impressions and views because you're putting out more content. That doesn't mean the content's performing better. We have to be very careful with that, looking at successes and saying, hey, we use AI and we had a positive outcome. That's not necessarily the case. So I wanna be very cautious with saying something's successful because of AI. I think successful is arbitrary. And so how do we define success when using AI? Well, what parts of the campaign or what parts of what we did utilized AI? Not everything did. Maybe it was the concept that was good and we just happen to use AI to help make it better. So I don't necessarily think that AI is making things better. I think, what was the quote that I used yesterday, Jace? It's turning fools and it's putting fools on a pedestal and it's making experts much sharper. What we don't want to do is to make someone who's not a writer think that they're a writer because they've used AI and they've been able to form a complete sentence and build out a paragraph that they wouldn't have been able to do before. Like, congratulations, you just moved up a step. You still have a long ways to go to be a professional writer. Just because you threw it in ChatGPT and it gave you a cohesive thought, it didn't make, that's not necessarily a good piece of content. Maybe for you, because that's where you're at your level, but you give that same tool and you put in a different prompt with the professional writer, you get something that's gold that right. might perform a lot better.
Yeah. And I've noticed that too, is that people will say, hey, look what I've written. And you go, yeah, that's okay. It's nothing special. So it's bringing out the writing style and creating the proper prompting to actually get it to be gold. But there's so many people that are just putting in the wrong information with the wrong prompt and just getting an average answer, and they do think it's gold. So, and this kind of leads to the next question. And Jace, brand identity. So I've noticed with ChatGPT that it definitely hallucinates. So to keep the hero or branding specific to the brand's identity, how can you keep that intact and ensure that that's going to happen when you're using AI generated content?
It's having that brand expert in the driver's seat the entire time. You know, Mara touched on, you know, the term fool. Not the biggest fan of that term, but at times they do look like fools if you look at the definition. Like, they think they know what they're doing, and a seasoned trained eye can easily identify what's wrong. And not wrong is in the sake of it not looking good with brand identity. It's more, is it aligned with the audience? Does it support the values of the company, the vision, the promise? All those, the brand foundation itself, it really, AI isn't smart enough yet, or rather it hasn't really been mapped to be able to carry that information and generate content based on the foundation. And I think that's what the next step is for AI when it comes to content generation, is that it is going to get to a point to where you can add prompts very similar to how Midjourney is with art, where you can actually explain the scenario, you can input the values, the mission, the promise, the all the above. The archetype, the character types, you can even get to a point to where you start to say, well, you know, I want a Neil deGrasse Tyson type of swagger, but I want to have the crisp, short punchiness of Steve Jobs on a keynote presentation. And it'll be able to do that for you. And if you know both those character types and you know your value system, you can then start to turn the screws on it and get it to where it needs to be without having to hire, you know, five writers to go into a boardroom and you know, work all night long on this statement or these chunks of content. That's where I really see us having the privilege of leveraging that type of AI. Get us there sooner and then have an expert come in and take a look at it and refine it. It's no different than any other field, really.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen. I'm going to use Amazon as an example, but it could be any industry. But when you have a million different sellers that are using AI platforms to develop their titles, their keyword research, competitive research, what happens? Well, you're shaking your head. So what do you think is going to happen?
Google's already put out guidelines on it. That's part of their spam update. They're decimating affiliate sites right now, decimating them. Yeah. The content's not helpful. If you make content just to drive traffic, and to get views. So if you're using a lot of AdSense boxes for to get money off of views for advertising, if you're just using a lot of affiliate link, if you're just making affiliate content, they're decimating those sites. They're de-indexing those sites because they're not helpful. The one thing to keep in mind is Google, why is Google doing this? Why is Amazon going to be doing this, right? Because it takes a lot of resources to run the web. Hundreds of thousands of servers, lots of energy. It's a huge thing, right? There's like the sustainable SEO is actually a topic right now with all the server space and all the resources it takes to crawl the millions and billions and trillions of pages on the web and archive them and figure out where they belong and how to get them in front of the right people. If you have all these people writing crap content just to get it in front of affiliates and all this other stuff, Google's like, get it off the web. It's not helping anyone. And so affiliates are gonna have to come up with a different strategy. I think the creator is going to be given all that traffic that the affiliates now are going to be losing out on, because if you were making 10, 20, 50,000 a month on these affiliate sites or more, it's part of their spam brain. It's part of the spam brain update. It's like, no, this stuff's not helpful. So whether it's on Google, whether it's on Amazon, they're all going to follow suit, because at the end of the day, they're in the business of creating the best human experience possible, which is why we named our framework the Human Experience and Revenue Optimization. When you optimize for the human experience, revenue follows, period. And so with all these affiliates just leveraging AI to auto-generate title tags and auto-generate keywords, AI doesn't have context perfect. So it's going to be easy to spot from a mile away, like, oof, someone didn't write this. Like, this doesn't look right. This isn't match up. And you just immediately erode trust the minute that happens. Right? So that's how AI is taking away from brand experience. And it's rather unfortunate, because to Jace's point earlier, you have to have an expert in the driver's seat. All these companies that are laying off creative teams because they think they're going to be able to get more out of AI, they're going to be hiring them right back, because you have to have an expert in the driver's seat in order to be able to leverage AI well and to use it for where its strengths are.
I like to, you don't really need AI in every instance too. We were talking about this yesterday, Amara, in prep for this call, is, you know, having an expert in that driver's seat also gives you the advantage of them kind of looking forward and seeing, do we need this? Assessing the value. Is it worth spending time or even leveraging this technology? Or is this something that we can do in half the time with the absolute assurance that this is going to be authentic? You know, you have to know when to pull those tools. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Kels, I think we have a few questions that have come in. And by the way, I see a stranger on the podcast. Tony, welcome. I haven't seen you in a little while. It's glad to see that you're listening today.
All right. So we have a bunch of comments in the comment section here. So okay. The first one is from Alejandro. At the current pace, future AI-generated content will be based on previous AI-generated content. Original content is becoming an endangered species. Do you have any comments on that?
Absolutely. We've created our own monster, right? And so some of the best uses of AI that I love are distilling data, right? It does it better than humans, period. And it does it faster. And so if you have garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. And unfortunately, content has been bad on the web for over a decade. And so the fact that we're leveraging AI to make content when it doesn't have a good subset of content to work with in the first place is why we get such terrible results. So I think the rise of the content originators, people with original thoughts, people with expertise, I think we're going to see a boon for that, because people are just going to be yearning for something original and something helpful in a sea of crapola that just happened to make its way to the top.
Yeah, it's almost like they're looking more for curators in that regard to look at original content, AI generated content, and find out what the balance is. And that's pretty much what we've been talking about this whole time, is that middle ground of authenticity and automated support. And like I said before, with the music thing, we've been dealing with this forever. At what point have all the notes been played, all the rhythms, all the melodies? I think we're pretty close to hitting the end of that, right? So you go back and you visit the Beatles catalog, or you visit Sly and the Family Stone, and you take that sound and you get inspired by it and you emulate it. And at a certain point, that emulation becomes an imitation, right? Like you're covering them. And then all of a sudden you have that breakthrough to innovation where you're innovating and you're making your own sound based of all that drilling and all that understanding of what this original source was about, what inspired it, where did it come from. Now you can make it your own. It's only when the experts start to do that with the content and the art that we really start to see AI leveraged to create original content. Because nothing is new out there, man. Everything's been done. So,
right.
You know, yeah.
Okay, next comment or question.
All right, from Axel, who just had to head out. But from most of the users, they forget the human factor in their AI-aided copy. The result is just funny but useless.
It's true. I mean, and people are calling it out. Like I see on Facebook groups all the time, it's like, your content was generated by AI. They're just starting out. They're not even trusting human generated content. That's crap. They're like, this had to have been written by AI. I'm like, I don't think that this is the way it's spelled. I think that person actually wrote it. So now we're like looking at each other like you're a bot. Like we don't even trust humans anymore to write content because now the AI is in the picture. They're just like, and that's just basically a call out. Like that's bad content. That doesn't look real. That doesn't look authentic. It doesn't. But I think it's interesting. Sometimes I don't even think it's funny. I think it's just, it's a waste of time and space. But yet every single platform is adding UI AI buttons to everything. And I'm like, well, that's not helpful.
It's damaging to your brand. Norm had talked about it earlier about publishing an article that was generated by obviously not a human and or just wasn't on brand. And you can't get that perception corrected. Like somebody's going to walk away talking about that experience, no matter how many positive experiences they have. You now have an enemy out there, you know.
Right.
You don't want that.
Right. And it's trust. It's trust as well.
Yeah. All just right. Imagine being like at a car dealership and talking to a robot. You know, it's what it essentially feels like. It's the old car salesman. But anyway,
case in point, how many retailers right now are getting rid of self-checkout?
I hate self-checkout.
Everyone hates self-checkout.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't help the human experience. And AI is no different. Companies are using AI to save money, save time, save this, save that, and create a better experience. It creates a better experience for the company because they think it saves them money. It does not create a better experience. And any Stevie Wonder could have seen that coming, right? Like they don't like it. And so the companies are getting rid of it. Not only that, it created more theft and dishonesty, and they were losing money and shrinkage. So AI is the same thing. We'll have the same effect.
All right, Kels.
Okay, Jace, is it your camera doing the blur image background or your setting? It's very cool.
It's both the camera and the settings. Apple has a built-in portrait mode where we can actually slide it. Actually, it's AI too. So
you can see it right here. Where is it? Hold it. I'm a big Apple user. And how do you get that effect?
If your camera's on, you should see a little tiny camera icon up in your OS toolbar. If you click on that, you'll see dropdowns and you should see portrait, studio light, and a few other settings. If you don't, you might need to update OS. But yeah, it's built in. This is all AI right here. It's just using the edges of my body and then it's just masking it.
Wow, I got to check that out.
Yeah.
Spent all this money on background crap and lights.
And our last comment here is from Alejandro. I foresee an increase in creators experiencing the Dunning-Kruger effect. Suddenly everyone is an expert.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you were, I think the last question or the question before last was getting to, is that there's so much unoriginal content that, you know, people think, or actually was your statement, Amara, where you said the fool thinks he's the expert. And that's absolutely true. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think expert is going to become I think people are going to be a lot more discerning now because everything's so noisy. There are a lot of self-proclaimed experts that are popular. They're just talking about things that no one wants to talk about, and they're gaining popularity because no one else is talking about them. I think a lot of us older folks, especially, that are in just grinding, and that's what Jason and I are working on right now. We're out here doing the work. We don't have time to do podcasts and we don't have time to do all kinds of content, but guess what that's leaving rise to? All these people who aren't actually doing the work, who are theorizing, who are stealing other people's expertise and calling it their own. If the actual experts got out there and brought fresh perspective to things, they'd they probably beat out these folks that really have no idea what they're talking about. I can't tell you how many people on TikTok right now are leading the charge on how to get a job that you don't qualify for, right? How to fudge your resume because people don't check. If an HR person actually got on TikTok and said, hey, we actually do check for these things. Hey, don't do this because you're going to get fired within 2 months of getting a job, right? But we've seen an increasing amount of young people fudge their resumes and know how to talk the talk and know how to, you know, dodge and weave like they're in a boxing ring, certain questions to get the job that they don't qualify for. And yeah, there is a rampant, there's a lot of information out there, but there's good or bad, right or wrong, but there's not enough experts getting, true experts getting out there and putting out their expertise. And I think now is the time. It might seem oversaturated, but the problem is there's too much of a saturation of bad information. Because it's easier to share information if you don't care about the quality than it is to share it with the quality. Jason and I cut and edit way too much because we're perfectionists. We love our craft. People who put out bad information don't really care about their craft. They just want to be seen. They want attention and all that. And so I think right now is the time to encourage the true experts, the real people who have been doing this stuff for a long time and understand why things work. I think one of the biggest issues in marketing is the random acts of marketing that happens because people don't know why things work. They don't know, they don't understand how we got there. They just know expert says, run ad, use keywords, pull this lever. They don't know why that works and when it doesn't. And so when they go to do it for other accounts, it doesn't work. It's like, well, it should have. They get fired by a client and they just do it again until it works for another client. Like that same playbook works. But if they understood why it worked, they would understand if they just did this versus that. They get the desired result, but none of us have taken the time to understand our craft that deeply because the market hasn't demanded it. I think it's going to demand it here pretty soon.
I think it really is though. Currently we are as consumers, we're looking a lot more for transparency. I think it's huge nowadays, especially after 2020, you see this constant, you look at the comment fees, look at the reviews. There's certain statements that are being made that are asking for that. Just let me know what's in this. Let me know why you're doing this. Goes back to the brand thing. Like, it's always about why, not what. And if you can lead with that, say you're being transparent. The Verdant Leaf client of ours, we made sure that they were putting that forward. Lead with that. Let people know that you're not from overseas, that you're making it here, and that you're willing to show every part of the process to let people know you're trustworthy. You know, and if you're able to lead with that, people will follow. Good people too.
Okay, now I just got one other question. This is going back to Amar. When you were saying us old folks, so if you're considering yourself an old folk, should I say, you know, people of my age are like fossils, us fossils?
I think experienced is a better word.
Experienced, oh, okay. No, I was cool with fossil.
Vintage experience.
All right.
I think we've just had enough reps, you know?
Oh, there we go. Okay, that's it. Before we go over to the wheel, can you give us your information if people want to get in contact with you, if people want to get involved with your community? How can
Absolutely.
They do that?
thefullstackagency.com/community. We have a free version. We also have a premium version where you'll get more hands-on support, and we have our workshops, and we'll be sharing SOPs, like really not the surface level stuff, like the deep, the why, the what, the why, the how, all of it, right? And we'll have our experts in there really giving you the playbooks for how this stuff needs to work, how to integrate it into your marketing teams and organizations. thefullstackagency.com/community to join our community. Jason and I are both on LinkedIn, so you can look us up on LinkedIn as well. Yeah, I think that's probably the easiest way to get in touch with us.
All right, very good. So I'm going to go and just talk about Start, Scale, Exit, Repeat. We'll come back for the wheel. And by the way, if you haven't entered, it's just hashtag Wheel of Kelsey. Tag two people and you'll get a second entry. All right, I'm just going to talk about my buddy's book. Colin Campbell came out with Start, Scale, Exit, Repeat. And this is a book that has taken about 10 years to write. There's about 200 interviews in here. Forbes published it early on. And I believe it hit number one in about 15 different categories on Amazon. And I love the way that it's broken down. So it takes each module, start, scale, exit, repeat, and it breaks it down into story, people, money, and systems. And then there's subcategories to each one of those. So it really is a reference book for the beginner right on to the advanced seller. So if you want to check this out, it's Start, Scale, Exit, Repeat, and you can find it on Amazon. It comes in Kindle, softback, hardback, and also if you just want to listen to it on Audible, it's available there. All right, let's go back to the wheel.
It's time for the Wheel of Health.
Welcome everyone to the Wheel of Kelsey. I'm going to shuffle up these names. We do this every single episode, so we're going to shuffle this.
Somebody's going to be lucky.
Let's see. If you are the winner, make sure you email me k@lunchwithnorm.com. And Michael is the winner.
I think that said Michael and Norm are the winners.
All right.
Congratulations, Michael. That's a great one. Okay. Jace. Amara, thank you so much.
Want more great information? Don't forget to subscribe by clicking here. Also, if you want to check out our latest podcast, click over here. Lunch with Norm.